So before I read the purpose, just let's think about how we owe great debt of gratitude to Srila Prabhupada for translating this wonderful Bhagavad Purana, and how without Srila Prabhupada we wouldn't be sitting here today. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kashyapa informed his wife that just because Lord Shiva happened to be his brother-in-law, that should not encourage her in her offense towards him. Kashyapa warned her that actually Lord Shiva is not connected with anyone, nor is anyone his enemy. Since he is one of the three controllers of the universal affairs, he is equal to everyone. His greatness is incomparable because he is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said that among all the devotees of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is the greatest. Thus the remnants of foodstuff left by him are accepted by other devotees as Mahaprasad, or great spiritual foodstuff. The remnants of foodstuff offered to Lord Krishna are called Prasad. But when the same Prasad is eaten by a great devotee like Lord Shiva, it is called Mahaprasad. Lord Shiva is so great that he does not care for the material prosperity for which every one of us is so eager. Parvati, who is the powerful material nature personified, is under his full control as his wife, yet he does not use her even to build a residential house. He prefers to remain without shelter, and his great wife also agrees to live with him humbly. People in general worship Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, for material prosperity, but Lord Shiva engages her in his service without material desire. He simply advises his great wife that all kinds of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the greatest, is the highest, and greater than that is the worship of a great devotee or anything in relation with Vishnu. So there is a clear message here that, first of all, today is Ekadashi. And who would like to say what is the best thing to do on Ekadashi? Chant. And what else? Glorify Vaishnavas, right? So we have a very wonderful opportunity today to glorify Lord Shiva. As Srila Prabhupada mentions here, he's is the greatest of all Vaishnavas. So I would like to start with first to explain who is Lord Shiva. I hope you're reading Nectar of Devotion and you are reading about the qualities of the Jiva. And then after Jiva, who has 50 qualities, we have Lord Shiva, who has 5 more qualities. Now, I don't know them by heart, I must say, so I'll read them out. And these 5, Jiva Tattva is, that's us. And we have 50 qualities, which are in minute quantity, okay? So we have 50 qualities, and each quality is like in a small percentage in comparison to, say, Lord Krishna, who also has those 50 qualities, but he, in his case, they're unlimited. We have like a sample, like a drop, so we can get a little taste of it. However, Lord Shiva is a very special personality because he's in between. Best description is that says that Lord Shiva is like a yogurt. So it's yogurt is milk, but it's not milk. It comes from milk, but it's different. You cannot say milk is exactly the same as yogurt, yet in a way it is the same. So Lord Shiva has 5 more qualities which differentiate him from Jiva Tattva, which is our marginal potency, which is basically all of us spirit souls in this material universe and universes, I should say. One of the quality of Lord Shiva is that he is changeless. then he's all cognizant, ever fresh, Satchitananda, possessing an eternal blissful body and possessing all mystic perfection. Here is said also that Lord Krishna possesses also those five qualities, and that sometimes they are partially manifested in the persons of Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. So we again need to understand that those qualities, again, Krishna has unlimited qualities, quantity of those qualities, while in Lord Shiva's case, or in the case of Lord Brahma, when Lord Brahma is represented by the Lord, not by us, those qualities are partially or fully present. Anyway, that's like a very esoteric topic, and I'm not going to double too much. This is just to explain from this philosophical point of view, but more beautiful explanation is to talk about Lord Shiva as a person who is extremely powerful and very, very merciful. As we read in this purport, and what Srila Prabhupada is saying, Lord Shiva is so special because although he's so powerful, what are all pictures of Lord Shiva like? If you see Lord Shiva on the picture, what would you think, like a first thought? Would you think of him as an extremely powerful celestial being? I mean, he is, but usually Lord Shiva is presented as like living like a sage, like ascetic, right? Does he live in a big palace? Does he have lots of opulence, like in Vaikuntha Loka? Is he presented with lots of jewelry and, right? So the reason for that is because his devotion to Krishna is manifested through his service mainly. And his service is a very special one. And he really takes a special person to do that. Does anyone know what Lord Shiva does? What is he known for? Sorry? Mm-hmm. So, but also, he looks after whom? Mm-hmm. So, basically, most fallen, right? Like those who nobody really wants. and that's a good fortune for all those souls, because without Lord Shiva, they would be truly lost. Like this, Lord Shiva is like an undercover devotee because he's devotee of Krishna, yet for those who worship Lord Shiva, they worship him as their master. And then they think, oh, he's like one of us. Look, he's covered in ash, he wears skulls, right? And because they're attracted to the mode of ignorance, they mistakenly think of Lord Shiva as their master, who is like one of them, so they can relate to him and they follow him. But what happens there, by following Lord Shiva, those souls make progress. So without even knowing, it's called Agyata Sukriti. They're not specifically wanting to get closer to Krishna, but through the mercy of Lord Shiva, by following Lord Shiva and by being devotional to Lord Shiva, that blessing comes to them, that they slowly make a progress, so that they don't stay forever on that level, because how can they progress? They're not interested in worshiping Krishna or anything or anyone that is even resembling mode of goodness. So, glories of Lord Shiva are like, there are many of them. So I would like to say a few things about the pastime everybody, well, those who read Bhagavatam, and I hope you all do. You know that Lord Shiva is a very, very special also because of his tolerance levels. I mean, I know it says that he's Ashutosh, he's very easy to please, and also from some different pastimes we know he can get very angry very quickly as well. But in this context today, I would like to stick with the with the positive ones. And Lord Shiva, we know that as a devotee, we should look up to him. So we worship Lord Shiva, we offer him respect as a devotee of the Lord. So we don't worship, as a Vaishnavas, we wouldn't worship Lord Shiva separately, like as a separate entity from Lord Krishna. So in that context, we follow, we can feel inspired, and we can follow some of his behavior, like when Daksha in the arena, anyway, Lord Shiva came. But yeah, I think you know the story. When Lord Shiva arrived to the arena, and Daksha was very much inimical towards Shiva, so he started getting offensive towards him, and that very quickly escalated because followers of Lord Shiva started cursing back, and then they cursed back, and there was like a two parties. But does anybody remember what Lord Shiva did in that situation? So there is a lot going on. Somebody is cursing you. People who are following you, people, your friends and followers are cursing back. And what do you do? So what did Lord Shiva do? Anybody can want to say? He left. Did he engage into argument? Why do you think it's so? You must speak louder, because also there are devotees in the on the internet audience, so they won't be able to hear anything. Is there a second microphone? Silence. So yeah, I was asking, what was the reason why Lord Shiva left? He did. It was all about him. You know, he was getting cursed and belittled and everything. And then the whole it was escalating. So why did he leave?
Because if somebody is behaving in a dharmic way, if somebody is behaving in unrighteous way, mm-hmm. we necessarily don't need to come down to their level to give a befitting response. Sometimes silence is also a good response.
Any other thoughts?
Prabhupada describes a few reasons. Actually, I was reading that some time back, and he was describing the atmosphere. The Vaishnava doesn't want to be in that such a offensive atmosphere, so it's not really conducive for him in his spiritual progress in concentration and meditation, because that's one thing that Shiva is known for. For his meditation upon Sankarshan. So, and then as a Vaishnava, you're causing aparads, offensive. He had a very blasphemy, a very bad attitude to himself. So as a Vaishnava, he didn't really want to cause any offenses. If he continued to stay there, he'd invite more offenses. So then he left that place. Right. Yeah.
So the exact verse here, which is in the Canto 4, Chapter 2, Verse 33, he says, the sage Maitreya said, when such a cursing and counter-cursing was going on between Lord Shiva's followers and the parties of Daksha and Bhrigu, Lord Shiva became very morose. Not saying anything, he left the arena of the sacrifice, followed by his disciples. So this is another interesting point. He, by leaving, the disciples followed him. So he, by this one action, he de-escalated the situation, because he removed most of the people who were engaged in the argument. And in spiritual life, we often encounter arguments, unless maybe somebody here never had any. I think it happens, right? And sometimes even amongst devotees. I don't know. Does it happen? Everybody's like, shall I be vulnerable and tell the truth? Yes. And here we can, for example, in this case, because why Lord Shiva left? And first he said he got a bit morose. He got morose because he felt this wasn't right, like you said, it wasn't right. The atmosphere changed, and immediately all the sacrifices and everything devotees were doing, it becomes kind of meaningless, right? Mm. It's like we are here, we chant, and do seva, and then suddenly argument happens, Kali Yuga, and modes of nature push us, and we sort of, something goes wrong. And do you feel really amazing after having an argument? Who feels really great afterwards? I don't. What happens when you have argument? What happens after? How do you feel? A bit like, do you feel really enthusiastic in your Krishna consciousness? I don't. Huh?
Agitated.
Yeah, but not happy. That's the point. So this is a perfect example that Lord Shiva is showing us what should be done. If there is an argument, unless we have actually something, ways to de-escalate the arguments, we should not take sides. Taking sides leads to, because we don't know the situation, we most likely don't even understand what's going on, and being attached to one or the other party doesn't necessarily mean that that party is right. So best thing is to de-escalate. And that would be a proper Vaishnava behavior as well, to try to calm the situation down before, because in arguments, devotees also commit offenses against each other. And that's why afterwards no one feels really happy, because all that energy and stuff that happens in a subtle platform takes away our enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is so important in Krishna consciousness. Do you think enthusiasm is really good to have in Krishna consciousness? Who likes to feel enthusiastic? Hands up. Oh, only you don't want to be enthusiastic, no? And who would like to be enthusiastic 24/7? Right. Well, good news is you can. You can if you keep Krishna in the center and keep your eyes on the prize. Okay? When we keep eyes on the prize, which is bhakti, then all the disturbances, they will happen. And when they happen, the pain is, I read some Buddhist monk, I think, said, pain is inevitable in this material world, but suffering is optional. So this is really interesting point. Pain is inevitable. So when we try to avoid it, it's a waste of time. Instead, just surrender. It is what it is, but suffering is something else. Suffering is when we dwell on that pain and then we get stuck on it. And then we, oh, why am I suffering now? Why am I in pain now? Oh, why did I do this? Why is Krishna doing this to me? And again, what's happened, it's distracting us from what we are meant to be doing, and that's to develop spiritually, okay? And keep serving. And Krishna, like Lord Shiva is saying here, Lord Shiva is not partial to anyone. He doesn't hate anyone, even if they're maybe they're not that great, but he doesn't feel repulsed by all the ghouls and ghosts and the living entities that are like very, you know, interested in all kind of things that I don't really want to mention here. But he wants to help them. So that's his level of compassion is huge. And the level of compassion of Lord Shiva is so huge that Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Are they coming? Maybe not. They open the curtain or not? Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gaur Nitai ki jai. So great devotee like Lord Shiva, he always wants to help others and thinking about how to do something that will help somebody progress. So that's why he helps the most fallen. And one of the examples when he was also very, very helpful is drinking the poison. If you know the pastime, when Lord Shiva was drinking the poison, right? That's the, I think it's the 8th canto? Okay, 8th canto, chapter 7. When Lord Shiva, they were churning the ocean of milk, demigods and demons, and there was nectar on one side, and on the other side there was poison. But that poison suddenly threatened to destroy and kill everyone in the universe. So, frankly, everybody started panicking because they were happy to see nectar, but there was poison as well. So Lord Shiva kindly understood the danger, and he said in verse 37, "My dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly, it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependent. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity toward one another, but devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. My dear gentle Bhavani, when one performs benevolent activities for others, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is very pleased. And when the Lord is pleased, I'm also pleased, along with all other living creatures. Therefore, let me drink this poison, for all the living entities may thus become happy because of me." How wonderful. I mean, think about it. Lord Shiva volunteered to drink the poison. Is he getting any benefit from it, personally? Not really. He says he's at the risk of his own life, because there was, nobody knew what's going to happen. He didn't know what's going to happen. And at some point, we know that there was that line on his throat appeared, and that is called blue line. It's called Nilakanta. So great personalities, great devotees, this is another example that we can follow from Lord Shiva, learn something from Lord Shiva, that helping others and taking, removing bad situation from devotees, helping them get out of the bad situation, giving them our time, giving them our skill, giving them our kindness, our association. Being a human, really, and reaching out and helping. It's so important, because Lord Shiva says here, if somebody helps other, when you do benevolent activities, Lord is pleased, and then Shiva said, "I'm pleased, and all other living creatures are pleased." So the impact of one good act has so many benefits. And just imagine helping devotees. And when I say helping, it's not like, yeah, Prabhu, or you drop something, here you go. But I'm talking, we all know we struggle in spiritual life. Like I was saying in one of the classes, it's not like a smooth line upwards. It's very, very squidgy, It goes up and down. And in those moments, think about the situation when you really felt it was so difficult in your life. Just close your eyes and just think of the moment when it was so difficult and you were like actually really genuinely praying to Krishna, please help. And how much would it mean to you at that moment that somebody comes to you and say, "Hey, are you okay? How are you? What can I do for you?" Without judging you, without questioning, how did you allow yourself to... unconditionally offering their kindness and their help. How much they would mean to you? Would anybody like to say something? Or did you always experience that? Yes.
So you will remember this very great gratitude and will be very thankful, you know, to this devotee, and it will help to have a good relationship further on. Yeah.
It does help. Mm-hmm. But it's a wonderful moment when we really need somebody in our lives, and that somebody is there. And what happens when no one is there? Did you have a situation when you're struggling and you're quiet and nobody knows and you wish somebody is there, but sort of like, you know, tumbleweed is going in the sand and you're like, feel lonely. Is it a good feeling? I mean, do you like being in that situation? I don't. So in those situations also think creating meaningful relationships is important. Rupa Goswami explains, please read Nectar of Devotion, please read about how devotees act with each other, and he's saying like confining it to each other in confidence means if somebody tells you something, you don't go on Facebook and hey, did you know this devotee? Don't do that. don't engage into frictions. Like Lord Shiva declined to participate, that he removed himself. So why? Because it's not helping. What's the purpose of that? Let the flare burn itself off, and then it's going to be gone. We don't need to fan the fire. Instead, we can use our time to see if somebody needs our assistance to help them. And whether it's a senior, junior devotee, doesn't matter. Every devotee has a moment when could do with somebody to be there. So work on creating meaningful relationships with each other. And have that one or few people in your life, devotees, who will be there for you, that you can tell them exactly what it is going on in your life, and that you will get support and keep progressing in your spiritual life. If we don't do this, things within our heart, they're eating us, they're poisoning us, and we need somebody like Lord Shiva to drink that poison, to remove it from our hearts, to help us. And on that note, we can also say, like gurus, our spiritual masters, they're also volunteering, and by giving us initiation, what do? They connect with us, they take some of our karma. And think about it, how many of us would come to somebody and say, yeah, or you're suffering from that disease, give it to me. I mean, let's be real here. How many of us would actually, somebody suffering from some disease, I don't know, kidney disease, I'll have your kidney disease so you can progress in your life and you can feel better. Let me suffer for you. I mean, that level is very high. But that's the level of our spiritual master. Just because we don't see it, it's not like a thing that they actually take away from us visibly. They do take away a lot. And they do suffer for it. They do experience changes in their life that are not very favorable because of what they've taken on kindly. And that's why it's very important, if we are initiated or Brahman initiated, to strictly follow the four regulative principles, to chant our 16 rounds, and to be conscientious that somebody's, that our spiritual master is not just some guru figure. He's a person who taken our disease, at least most of it from our heart, onto himself. And how grateful we need to be every day for that mercy, for that blessing. So if you're experiencing bad moments, think about it and just try to get help if you're going through any tough time like that. So anyway, this is more or less coming to an end. There is one more thing I wanted to say about Lord Shiva, just quickly, and that is something that I think it's quite nice to hear. Again, importance of Lord Shiva and his greatness in the holy places. We all know going to holy dhams like, you know, Vrindavan or Mayapur, we get we hear about Lord Shiva guarding the place, and one of the places I just wanted quickly to go through is Harihara Kshetra, which is in Navadvip, and there is a beautiful deity of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu together. Did anybody visit? You all visited the place? Who visited the place? Harihara Kshetra. Who's been to Mayapur? So if you go to Mayapur, you must go there. And if you go to Harihara Kshetra, very close to that is also Nrisimha Pali, where the very ancient deity of Lord Nrisimha there is. It says it comes from a few million years ago, from Satya Yuga. So if you come to Mayapur, spare a day. It's a day, short, like a day trip. You can go and visit. And Harihara Kshetra is very special because it says Lord Shiva chants Lord Chaitanya's names all the time there. And it's so beautiful. I'm just going to quickly read this. It says, Harihara Kshetra are described in these words. It's a Mahavaranasi, it's called, because it's the highest abode of Lord Shiva. And know this, that this place, which extinguishes all sin, is better than Kashi. And it says also that this Navadvip Kashi is superior to other Kashi, which is the Kshetra. Here Shiva is always dancing and chanting the name of Gaura. Gauranga! Oh God, you need breakfast. Gauranga! Arivo! Gaura Gaura! Begging his followers to accept Gaura Bhakti. The sannyasis who live for thousands of years in Kashi may attain liberation through the cultivation of jnana, but here the devotees kick away that liberation as they dance and chant the name of Gauranga. So if you go to Harihara Kshetra, it says if you leave your body there, Lord Shiva will come and chant Gauranga in your ear. So that's a blessing. And that's the power of Lord Shiva. And meditate on Lord Shiva as a great devotee who can be very merciful to us. And on this auspicious day of Satila Ekadashi, we can all meditate on that mercy and beg for it, that one day maybe we can also follow an example of Lord Shiva as much as we can and be as generous, as benevolent, and as kind to devotees like he is. Gauranga, Haribol, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Any questions, comments? Just for a couple of minutes. Hare Krishna. Microphone, please.
Gauranga. Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Thank you very much. I'm just wondering, all these different creatures which were devastating the universe, they were created by Shiva himself, it says in Bhagavatam. So naturally that he took charge to take care of them. But I don't remember in Srimad Bhagavatam anywhere. Was he ordered to do so, or how does that happen, that he get in charge of those, all these nasty, low-grade creatures? Is it his decision, or he was ordered by Brahma or somebody else? How does that happen, that he is that position?
Okay, I must admit I actually don't know the answer per Shastra, but what I do remember is that many living entities take form of those creatures. The soul transmigrates, and you know, when saved. Well,
according to karma, of course, whatever.
Yeah. So when say if the somebody commits suicide or something, they take kind of path of those creatures, and then the Lord Shiva is the one who sort of gets them up a bit from that level, and then the spirit soul is transcendental by nature. So those forms are also not like forever. They're only there for the duration of the material creation, but they're given to the souls who are perhaps very, very sinful, or you know, they have a very weird desires that they enjoy mode of ignorance so much. They're given opportunity to live life in a deepest mode of ignorance. However, Krishna being so kind, he wants every soul to come to the level of bhakti. So can you, maybe can you only think about how far away those souls are from level of bhakti, any level of anything, to be honest. But I wouldn't be able to say how exactly Lord Shiva happens to look after them. What I'm thinking is Parvati is material nature, and she's also like being, you know, like a mother of the material, you know, being personification of material energy. She's also very, very well involved with material dealings and material things, and that's probably why those creatures happen to be there, because they want material stuff. So who better to give it to them than Shiva and Parvati? But we also know Shiva and Parvati have different manifestations, like a Durga or Kali. So different manifestations again are to correspond to the different desires of different souls who want even worse things. Like, you know, Kali worshippers are quite gross, you know. But as Parvati and Shiva, they're devotees of Lord Krishna. I mean, they manifest themselves as the devotees and, you know, want to help. Sorry, I'm not very scholarly.
I got a glimpse, I guess. I just kind of think, you know, such a compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he creates material world, his only desire is to reclaim everybody back.
Yeah.
Therefore, he extends himself into every fragment of creation,
yes,
in the forms, like Shiva is his own form, just to try to scoop up and reach, yeah, those, anyone. So that's a kind of, and somebody has to do this. So one of these energies manifests in such a way to try to reach anyone.
Yeah, that's why Sankirtan and Harinam and Kirtans are so good, because this is how you reach people who don't want to be reached. So, and in a way, how I see it is like Krishna thought of everything, like no one's gonna be left behind, right? So that's why everyone, even in the worst possible form of life, they have a chance. But now in Kali Yuga, those chances are dwindling, but we're in the golden age, so now we have a chance because of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva Gatiranyata. Arivo, Gauranga. Okay.